On this week's episode, we float with It. Are we actually just scared of loving clowns? Did all these kids get septicemia? And are Easter egg hunts canceled? Find out now. You're listening to 24 Flames Per Second. September. This is 24 Flames Per Second, the podcast that roasts the films we love the most. And everybody, I'm your host, Robert Spiewak, and welcome to the show, and welcome to back to school season. Kids going back to school, kids riding bikes no more, just as if they got abducted by a clown. Everybody, this week we're talking about It Chapter 1 to celebrate It Chapter 2 coming out this week. And we're hanging out in the sewer of your ears. So before we get into the show, let's talk about some Party Fish stuff that's going on this month, that's new this month. Everybody, starting this week, it already started, you can catch a new Party Fish show, Your Daily Cathartic Scream, for every morning if you just need to let out some frustration, or at the end of the workday, wherever you might be. It's like a guided meditation for frustration instead. So go and check it out. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And so there's that. And then also we've got another new show that just joined the network that they've been going on their own for a while, and we brought them under our umbrella after the big live show we did at the end of July, the Shifties, which is a podcast about the service industry. If you are curious about the restaurant industry, if you've ever worked in the restaurant industry, front of house, back of house, whatever, these guys are just riffing and having a good time and talking about it as longtime members of the service industry. So yeah, you got to go check it out. Give a listen. It's good stuff. They're good guys. So go and check it out. It's brand new. And they've got a backlog you can listen to too before they were under our deal. So yeah, go check it out. That's it for that stuff. Everybody, yeah, we're excited to get into Stephen King's head. So let's get on with it. Across the table for me this week, the Beverly to my Bill, Katie Bennett.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
It's wonderful. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Katie.
Yeah.
Are you scared of clowns?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you watch the movie this week?
I didn't watch it this week. I watched it when it was released in theaters, okay. So like 2 years ago, and I have not got around to rewatching it. So I hope that the movie in a minute is detailed.
We'll see. We will see. Did you bring any background information for us?
I have a couple of little fun facts, just a few.
Well, let's hear them.
The first one is that the code name for this movie when they were shipping it out to theaters was Pound Foolish, which is literally the opposite of Pennywise.
Oh, God.
Yep. And then also...
Groan.
Yep. the teeth prosthetics that Bill Skarsgård wears as Pennywise, they made him drool profusely, but so the director liked it, yeah. So they kept it. And then the final thing that I was surprised to find out when I was looking up this movie was that the Duffer Brothers of Stranger Things fame were originally... They wanted to direct this movie, and they were set to do it, but then the studio kind of overlooked them and said that they weren't established enough, and they then went on to make Stranger Things. That's all I got, though.
Somebody's got egg on their face. Somebody somewhere.
No, I think we're better off.
Okay. Another hot take.
Yeah, we can talk about that during the extended play.
But yeah, very good. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being here. Let's get into the panels. What do you say? I feel like I'm in a hurry, but... I'm not. Or sounds like I'm in a hurry.
Let's get to it.
Starting with the roasters this week, to my right, Godzilla expert and teacher of your children, it's Ian Coleman.
It's me! Teach your children.
How are you doing?
It's good. I almost bought a house today, but that fell
what?
That fell what? Through.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a problem with the foundation. There was like a little cavern
so it
under it. So
might have literally.
Yeah. Maybe. If we had lived there, it might have fallen through. But yeah, maybe.
Wait, what were you saying? There's a cave underneath the basement?
Under the foundation, there was like a gap. Like the house is actually kind of leaning.
Oh, gross.
Like a whole sewage system with a little like cat clown.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Like maybe
little
there was some
little cat clown.
Something digging under there, but that fell through, and so yeah, I don't know.
C'est la vie.
Yeah, c'est la vie.
There's better houses out there.
This was a really good house, actually.
There's better houses out there.
I'm sure it's somewhere there are. Yeah. But I guess we'll see.
Anyways, it's good to have you here.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That you're at that point of adulthood.
Yeah.
Very good. Next to you on the roasting panel is doting theater father and another teacher of your children.
Yeah.
Brian Taves.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. I got here early.
Two hours
early.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Dedicated.
Yeah, super dedicated.
2 hours in timeout then.
It was okay.
Regardless, it's good to have you here now.
Thank you.
But yeah, so very good. Thank you guys for being here to roast it. And across the table from them this week, local Seattle storyteller and producer of Seattle's The Moth. You can find her on Twitter at Casey Rom. Casey Rom.
Oh, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. I feel a little bit like this is going to be exactly like my 10th grade English class, wherein I argue a lot about the text. So I'm excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're excited to hear both sides this week. You know how this goes. Let's start with movie in a minute. What do you say?
I guess.
Well, I know. We'll give you 60 seconds and a three count, and you'll give us the full plot synopsis of it. Full plot synopsis of it. Spoilers and all. All
right.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okie dokie. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1... Go.
We open on Georgie and his brother Bill. Georgie goes out in the rain and encounters Pennywise the Dancing Clown, who quickly murders him. We are in Derry, Maine, and this is where a lot of children are going missing. 8 months later, Bill and his friends start to see some scary shit going on that takes the form of their greatest fears. They call themselves the Losers Club. As they start to try to figure out what's going on in Derry, they add a couple new members to the Losers Club, including Beverly, who is a girl. Her dad sucks, and she kind of has a thing for Bill, and he kind of has a thing for her. They start to kind of piece together the fact that all the missing children are tied to the sewer system, and once Beverly is kidnapped, they realize they have to go into the sewers in order to save her. When they get down there, they learn that the only reason that it can continue is because of their fear, and they no longer fear him.
And you're out of time.
Damn it! I knew that.
You almost had it. That was really impressive.
Yeah.
They tell the clown they're not scared of him anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's notes for Moulin Rouge that I just pulled up.
That's not right.
And let's see. Bloop, bloop, bloop. That's notes for Jaws.
Jesus.
We'll find it.
Triple feature last night.
Here we go. Final fight with Pennywise. He goes down the hole. All the kids float down. And as far as we know, Pennywise is gone. And that's the movie.
Kind of.
What do you mean?
Bill also has to like face the fact that Georgie's fully dead.
Oh, right.
And that's sad. And then they...
whatever. We all knew Georgie.
The Losers Club kind of is forced to separate. And they promise to come back in 27 years, which tends to be how often
when
the children go missing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do a blood pack.
And then it says chapter one instead of just it.
Boom, 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 boom.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I'm surprised that we haven't at this point. It hasn't been like colloquialized as it chapter one.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that in our episode title. I'm calling it, saying it right now.
On the Wikipedia page, it says retroactively referred to as it chapter
because
one.
Y'all got.
Well, didn't they not know it was going to be a... Didn't they?
Who knew?
I think they knew.
No, they didn't. They weren't greenlit for a sequel yet.
Yeah, I think they needed to be sure that the first one would make money, and I think it.
Then
made
why
bank.
In the credits did it say at chapter one?
To like tease audiences with like, hey, you better.
They knew.
They only made one Golden Compass movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
They
from
only
what
made
I
one last Airbender.
Sorry.
The point is, they took a gamble and they won.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Always bet on the clowns. But yeah, great. That's the movie. Thanks, mm-hmm. Casey.
Yeah.
And so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get your opening statements. All so, right. Everybody, we will be right back. And we're back, everybody. We are talking about It Chapter 1 here on 24 Flames Per Second. Casey was real, real close, but didn't quite get the movie in a minute. So let's get your opening statements. All Why right. are you here defending It?
So I have a very personal connection to It in a lot of ways. For one, I grew up terrified of clowns. Someone decided before my sister had the words to say what she wanted to collect that she would become a collector of clowns. And so we had a room full of clowns and I hated them. Oh,
God. Yeah. Damn. Extended yeah. play material.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can go into detail. We'll circle back. Yeah. So exactly. I hated clowns. I grew up in a small town that had its own lore about a lake monster. Ooh. And, you know, all there was like this kind of setting that matched my own setting, and I was also like a baby horror fan, and so when
Love
I
baby
first saw I was the baby I first saw the miniseries, the Tim Curry miniseries, probably when I was too young to have seen it, and then I read the book in high school, and I feel like every iteration of It that I have consumed has been different and also satisfying. And for mm-hmm. me, this one was very satisfying in just kind of like the scares were good, the acting was really good, all the child actors were awesome. I was not surprised at all that they got greenlit for a sequel just to see like the adult casting of
yeah.
those kids. And I think Bill Skarsgård killed it. I think he's terrifying and embodies it in a different enough way that I didn't feel the need to compare it.
Sure. Okay. Roasters, what do you say we start with characters? Not all at once.
Okay. I think that, you know, I mean, obviously this being a, you know, book, an adaptation of a very, very long book. I think it clocks in, my copy clocks in at like 1,200 pages. You have to make some cuts and you have to make some sacrifices for like what, you know, gets put in the movie. But I think, you know, a movie that is supposed to be like about characters and their childhood should at least give, you know, time for each of these characters to shine and for us to get to know them as people. And I think that, you know, at least in terms of like the footage that ended up in the finished movie, it's very unbalanced. Obviously, like, you know, Bill and Bev are like the, you know, tier one, you know, like main cast characters. Mm-hmm. And we have like Ben and Richie who get like some development, you know, maybe arguably enough. And then we get characters like Stan and Mike who just kind of feel extraneous to the group. And I was just really, you know, hoping that, you know, this cast of characters who are supposed to be friends, that we could get enough time at least with all of them to feel as though they had like bonded as a group and for us to become endeared to them. And I really feel like, you know, pretty much like as soon as like Mike gets introduced to the group, we pretty much like rush toward the climax. And so in that way, I felt pretty let down, and, you know, like the movie kind of lost an opportunity for me to connect with it as much as it wanted to.
Okay.
I think there's such an emphasis on pacing in the film because they want to retain the audience's attention to the horror elements that I do think that supports what Ian is saying about the characterization, because it is such a, I think it really, the book, I mean, I have not read the book, but would you say, Ian, like the book is a character study?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Like, yeah. And I feel like the kind of like Hollywood kind of put its claws into this, in a sense that it makes it feel like we need to rush from plot point to plot point to plot point. And while I think it is successful in that way, to give the Casey credit in that regard, but I do think we were kind of like, we're almost getting caricatures of these boys. And in some way, I think that's detrimental to the themes that Stephen King is trying to talk about in his original work.
Okay. Yeah. And even with the parents too, who I think like we get some pretty, you know, decent enough development for all of them in the book. And like, you know, yes, like Bev's dad is still like a creepy, dirty dad in the book, and like Eddie's
creepy,
mom,
dirty dad.
Creepy, dirty dad. And Eddie's mom is still like overprotective and, you know, a little crazy in that way in the book too. But like the way that it's presented here, like there's really no context for their behavior, and like they're pretty much just like, you know, cartoon villain parents who like live at their house and keep them from doing what they want to do. So yeah, I was just like hoping for more characterization and less characterization, like caricaturization, like Brian was talking about.
So I have kind of two responses, because I feel like there were two parts to that. One of which being like, yes, we certainly don't spend an equal amount of time with the members of the Losers Club, but even though Mike isn't like with the gang for the most time, I would say arguably we get more of his backstory than some of the other characters. And the point is that he's kind of having to go it alone for so long. So that didn't really bother me as much. And I think another thing we have to give credit to is that this is meant to be a two-part film. With a second chapter, and we've already established from trailers and press that there will be flashbacks, there will be more time spent with them as children. So there's potential that we could still get more of that information that we're lacking from this first movie. On top of that, you know, you talked about the parents, and to me, I see what you're saying about this being a character study. And again, I read this in high school, but what I really took away from the book was the theme of like the loss of innocence, and that, you know, it is just representing that on a larger scale, and that these kids are realizing that they do have to go out there and do things on their own, because none of their parents are really all that great. I would say arguably Bill has the least shitty parents, but they're grieving. And so it's, you know, all of these kids have each other, and that's the point. The parents aren't really the focus to me, and all we needed was enough to know that they're either not involved or terrible.
Interesting.
I think, like, I think, and this kind of intersects with plot, too,
sure.
Because
we
think...
We can go into that, yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, again, I feel like the film clips along at a nice pace. I do think we go from, like... I tend to maybe disagree a little bit with Ian in the sense of, like, that we get to the climax too soon. It does feel, like, earned. But there, I think the plot, we sacrifice some of, like, some logic in the plot, and that lends into characters. So, for example, like, Ben is the character who is the new kid.
The library,
yeah. So, for example, like, he talks about how, like, he spends time in the library because he doesn't know anybody else. So, like... During that time, it feels like, and I haven't read the book, but in the context of the film, it feels like, oh, like, I am in the library because no one likes me, no one knows who I am, so I'm just gonna matter-of-factly research the history of Derry, and, like, and I just feel like it's the filmmaker and producer's choice to be like, look at, like, let's use this as, like, an expositional tool to get him, to have him be sort of the one who, like, has insight on the situation, and it feels like I understand how it, like, it works intentionally for his character, but it also feels like, why is he in the library? Like, why is he? Is it just because no one knows him? I don't know. I just didn't buy that.
Yeah,
it didn't sell it to me.
I will, like, totally agree with you there. And how the book approaches that differently is, like, there are actually, like, you know, interludes in between, like, the different parts that the book is divided into that, like, actually, like, you know, we spend time within, like, those time periods that, you know, Ben is researching in that one exposition dump scene. And what I'm kind of sad that we didn't get, because this was supposed to be in like, so the movie was originally supposed to be directed by Cary Fukunaga, who you might know from True Detective and, you know, soon to be the next Bond movie.
But
how he would have approached it in his script is he would have actually had flashbacks to, you know, these different, like, time periods in which, like, it attacked. But then the studio was like, nope, not enough scares, cut it. And so that was one of the reasons why, like, he... I don't know if he was, like, removed or if he opted out because the
studio... I think
studio,
he opted out.
Yeah, the studio demanded, you know, that and some other stuff he wanted to keep and be cut. Yeah, and that... It does feel like a loss to me that, like, we don't really get that real sense of Derry as a place. Like, it feels like a setting and we have, like, the great set designs and all that, but it doesn't feel like a character in the same way that it did in the book and that it probably would have in the, you know, the Cary Fukunaga movie that I kind of wish we would have gotten. But, yeah.
And I think it's been accomplished with other Stephen King work, too. Like, you look at it, like, you look at a film like Stand By Me. Mm-hmm. Like, Rob Reiner does such a good job of, like, you know, keeping us in the moment, like moving us forward in the plot, but having us go back and look at like the context of like why, like what is that triggering memory of like why that person.
You're gonna compare an adaptation of a short story to an adaptation of 550 pages of a book.
Sure. Yes. I mean, yes, I will. Because, like,
I had to stretch Stand By Me. This is different. This is trying to compress so much information into a like, digestible amount of film.
But, like, I feel like if the idea is, and I guess in my like, if I'm a director adapting somebody's work, I want to honor the source material. So, you know, going back to what Ian was saying about the original director's intent, I find I would like to spend some more time with the characters, because then I feel like it makes the scares and it makes the catharsis at the end of the film, it makes it more earned. But I think what we've got here with this adaptation is like we just want to like, we want to get to the scares, we want to get to the things that like jump out at us, the cool effects, which it does have. But I also feel like it sacrifices some of the, I think, the original source material.
And I think what you also lose in cutting that, you know, that backstory, that history, is the kind of theme that was in the book, with that theme that's like within the source material, which is that, you know, like even within like this, you know, not too much happening, you know, idyllic small town, there's like, you know, there's always like a, you know, evil thing festering under the surface, mm-hmm. which like in real life we could equate to like, you know, racism or, you know, discrimination or, you know, all these like little things that, you know, might sully the history of a town. And of course, like, you know, Pennywise and the sort of curse that he embodies is like, you know, it's a metaphor for that.
Yeah.
But without the real sense of like this town as a the history of this town and like all the things that have happened there, we lose that element of the theme, and it just kind of becomes a pretty generic, like, you know, kids fight a monster that's living in the sewer type of story.
I feel like we're approaching the plot differently, and so I will explain how I approach this plot. While I do think the ensemble characters are very important, and again, in the book, I think they are more important, and I'm like viewing this as a separate media and an adaptation that is going to be different. I think in the movie, Bill is definitely the main character, and we are following his story. I mean, it opens on him and Georgie. It opens on their relationship. It, you know, continues. We spend more time with his family. We see him building models of the sewers in his, like, he's doing the research. Ben is, a little bit of a plot device to help him get the connection, but he's the one who finds all the information about the sewers. He's the one who ultimately puts it together, and he's the one who, at the end, has to essentially kill his brother because it's not him, and like make peace with the fact that he's gone and that at least they've saved potentially other people from being taken by this entity. And so I think that those other characters are important. And again, I would argue we're going to get more time with them and potentially more of the backstory of Derry, because we are going to come back in 27 years. But I feel like if you take the perspective that Bill is the main character that we're following, there is that catharsis and there is that change.
But I think because we don't spend as much time with, I think that's a great argument. I think because we don't spend as much time with the characters, the film suffers from some weird tonal shifts. Like, there's just, I don't know, like, there were points where I was like, am I supposed to laugh? Like, what is, like, so for example, bold choice to have an 80s montage when they're cleaning the bathroom of blood. Like, like, it's a great scene, but I'm also kind of like, wait, what? Like, it took me back it took me out of it a little bit. I was like, wait, what? Like, we're, and I get it. Like, I get the intention of it. It didn't take me out of it so much where I didn't understand it in the storytelling. And then also, like, there's the weird, like, Beverly and Ben, like, new kids on the block thing, when there's, like, she, like, opens the door and there's, like, the new kids on the block poster reveal. It's like a quick moment. It's, like a very, like, 5-second moment. It's, like, really, like, it's a funny scene, but I'm also...
It does that music hit.
Yeah, it does that music hit, but I was just, like, it was a little too irreverent for me, and I was, like, wait, what? Like, and I feel like in... We see that those moments a lot in shows like Stranger Things, mm-hmm. or, you know, even, like I'll go back to Stand By Me, but they feel earned because we've spent a little bit more time earning those moments of like, oh, these are just like human moments of like, of levity. But I think like, I don't know. I felt, and also like there was like a very like Spielberg-esque sentimental score in the beginning where it's like, I'm going to float the boat down the river, and then his arm gets chomped off by Pennywise, and then it's like it just immediately shifts into horror, and I get it, and I know that's like coming because I'm familiar with the story, but I'm also like, wait, what? We went from like sentimental right into horror, and like I know that's the point of it, but I just like got I got confused as the viewer of like, oh, like this is a little too jarring.
I think I
felt the same way.
Yeah, the biggest like jarring moment for me is that rock fight, which I think is like totally it's a really important moment of the story that I feel like is totally ruined by the approach they take to it. Like in the book, it gets like a whole chapter, right? You spend a lot of time on that moment. Even in like the Tim Curry, you know, miniseries, which really does not hold up. That I think is actually a really well executed.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, but it's a really well executed moment where like we really get the sense of like, yeah, this is like the first time that these people are who've been, you know, kicked around and bullied their whole childhoods are like finally banding together and standing up for themselves. And so that whole moment in like both of those versions, the original and the original adaptation, like it reads as this like really triumphant moment. And in this movie, not only is it over like way too quick, we also get like that weird freaking like music montage and that slow-mo like fuck which like is like what, like this is not supposed to be like comedic. This is like a really powerful moment of catharsis for these characters, and like there are just all these choices that are being made and like that in those parts of the movie that you were mentioning that like really like undermine what I think is, if the movie had just like kind of backed off and like gotten out of the way of just like the, you know, what's already there on the page, I think it would have done a lot better for me.
I guess I come at it from a different angle. I think that by its nature, the fact that the main evil is portrayed as a clown is showing you that there is an intersection of fear and laughter. There is an intersection of being scared and like breaking the tension with jokes. And that happens in horror all the time. That's like a huge part of horror is that you have to find those moments to break the tension, and then it disarms your audience and then the scares become bigger because now they've lost that crescendo. They've come down and then it's just like, bam, we're going to hit you with something really terrifying. Mm-hmm. And that's how you manipulate the audience into being scared. And so for me, I'm not bothered. Like, I think the fact that it's like a sentimental opening is like, if you didn't know the story,
you like that.
Would be so great. I obviously knew the story, but I think that would be such a great, like, shocker, you know, and I love that. And ultimately, like, the rock fight, I can see the argument there, and I just go back to the fact that, like, we're trying to shove a lot into this movie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not everything is going to make the cut.
But I just, I don't know. Katie, did you have
something? Oh, no, I was going to ask a question to segue. Yeah.
No, please. You should ask a question.
Well, I'm just speaking of horror, do you think that the scares in this movie are effective? Like, the parts that are supposed to be scary, does it land?
I think the scares that are effective are the ones where it is like this, you know, shape-shifting monster that preys on their fear by like turning into, you know, picking their deepest psychological fears out of their mind and transforming into that and like perverting it in some way. I think when like we're going with that, it works pretty well. Like when I think the most effective moment for me is when, you know, Bill encounters the illusion of his brother in the basement, and then he's like very slowly like rotting and like water's pouring out of his mouth, and it's like, to me, that's effective because that's like, it's not just like a, you know, scary thing with sharp teeth jumping at the camera. It is a thing that has a psychological basis within like what we know about the character, and so to me that lands. But I think what this movie does too much of, and what kind of really loses steam as it goes on, is just this style of like, you know, having Pennywise move in this really jerky fashion and like run at the camera while making a really loud noise. I think this happens like 5 or 6 times. And like, I think the movie relies on that tactic too much of like, you know, and it's like, you can only do that so often before it becomes like before it just impression. It just doesn't make me feel anything anymore.
Spot on.
And like, you know, even within the opening scene, it's like, okay, a small child gets his arm bit off in like the first scene. Like, what are we building up to from there? We've already like started with this huge, you know, jarring, grotesque thing. Like, you know, I like my horror movies to kind of build to that moment of like, ah! Rather than just like start off there and gradually let me down.
I tend to agree with Ian in that sense, but like I also feel like the bullies were pretty terrifying. Like, holy shit! Like,
yeah.
Okay, first off, how many times has Ben got to get slashed in the tummy? Okay, like how many belly wounds does Ben have to get before? Like, poor Ben. But yeah, I feel like I'm going to say the same thing in the sense of like I do think there is a little bit of redundancy with the way Pennywise scares them, but I think that the filmmaker does do a nice job of like showing us the different fears, like for example, like and using practical. I think a mixture of practical and CGI effects.
It
to
was
accomplish
like
those.
Largely practical.
I wasn't aware of.
Pretty. How, I mean, obviously, some of it had to be CGI because like he was a giant person at one point.
Yeah.
But it's I know that was
the leper.
Like, yeah,
scene, like that.
The leper.
That's pretty scary. Like,
or like yeah, the lady from the painting.
Terrifying. So I think it's effective, but I also feel like it's effective in the sense that it's like, it's effective in the like that kind of like Hollywood. It's got this kind of like, it's still grotesque, but it still has this sort of like this sheen
yeah.
on it that's a little bit artificial. So I'm not quite scared of it, but I'm still like, okay, like I can understand how it
mm-hmm.
functions in the story. It makes it more accessible.
I will say, like, I was pretty freaked out for like a good portion of the movie because
sure.
I did see it in theaters the first time, and I think like anytime you're watching a horror movie in a theater and you have that collective like energy
yeah.
in
it's
there,
the best. It's the best.
Great.
It's the best.
And so with that, because it's so like relentless, like so I can see the argument for like repetitive, but for me
yeah.
it felt relentless. It was like every time I was like, we have to be like cool for a second now,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Like we have to be able to collect our thoughts. And for me, where it turned was the projector scene. Because,
oh,
like,
yeah.
for that, I was like, okay, they're having, like, a little get-together.
Yeah.
They're going to, like, solve the problem. We're going to have a meeting. And
mm-hmm.
then it's going to, like, hit the climax, you know? And I knew that was coming. And then, like, it's that, to me, is one of the more terrifying scenes. I agree that the basement scene is really
yeah.
scary. But the projector scene scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, I think that moment is well done, though, because, like, it builds up. It simmers. Like, we have the, like, you know, woman with the hair. It gradually is revealed
mm-hmm.
to be Pennywise. He's still for a little bit. The projector turns off. We have that moment of silence to kind of
yeah.
process this, and then boom!
Yeah.
He like jumps out as like a giant ass clown.
Yeah.
But like that's
clown.
Yeah, like, that's like, you know, the classic formula for scaring. Like you
yeah.
you build the tension and then you pay it off in an explosive way. You don't just like, you know, have a scary dude in makeup running at the camera and shaking a bunch.
I can yeah, and I can agree with that. I think that where I find a lot of the horror in this movie and in the book is that it's not just it that is terrorizing them. It is the bullies. It is their parents. It
yeah.
is, you know, like...
It's their fears and insecurities.
It's their fears and insecurities. Mm-hmm. And so what I would have liked maybe is more of Pennywise shape-shifting into things other than the clown. Like,
yeah.
I think the leper scene is terrifying. I think the painted lady scene is terrifying. The hands coming out of the burning door is terrifying. Like, all of that is really scary, and I
mm-hmm.
could have maybe used a little more of that, but ultimately, like, I didn't leave that movie being like, I wasn't scared. Like, I was really
yeah.
scared. Also, I hate clowns. So.
Did you notice in the scene where... Ben is looking through the book. The librarian is just staring at
yeah.
him. Yeah. I just noticed that the second time
oh,
I watched
yeah.
it last time, where he's like, yeah, like the librarian is just
yeah.
like creepily like staring.
I think this
yeah.
movie pays off on a second viewing too.
There's some
like,
great foreshadowing.
There's good foreshadowing and there's good, you know, just like little moments like that that maybe you would
yeah.
have missed the first time.
Beverly, when Beverly comes home for the first time, the TV is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's the kids show.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then if you listen closely to the kids show host is saying like the sewers are great, it's where
yeah.
kids can play, like
yeah.
we all float down here and
yeah.
it's like wait what, like
yeah. I think there's in the scene where Richie goes into like the room of clown dolls, there's a doll replica of the Tim Curry Pennywise.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Easter
I didn't
egg.
Catch that my first viewing.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's lots of scary moments. Like I find the scene where the bully is like he kills his dad and mm-hmm. the TV is like manipulating him. Any kind of like subliminal messaging and like brainwashing, that really freaks me out. I think mm-hmm. there's a lot to be afraid of in this movie. Yeah.
Like, and again, like I think yeah. like those character based scare sequences are like the really effective ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
When the storytelling and the action in the story matches.
Yeah. Yeah.
The characters. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's a great example. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about. How are the kids such good fighters? Like, that's my main question. Yeah. Like, that's kind of a gripe I had with, like, at the end, it's just, like, it's very, like, it feels very Marvel to
I
me.
Think
it's
the,
like,
yeah, like, I think the point is that they've, like, weakened him by no longer being afraid, and so it's, sure. like, an exaggeration that they're such good fighters because they know they have it now.
Yeah.
Like, they found the key, and they know they have what they need to defeat him.
Because they're using love.
Yeah, and that's
sort of
the power of love.
That's like kind of a criticism that's been leveled against the book too, is that mm-hmm. like the kids are, you know, they're a little bit too awesome, like they're a little bit too brave for people in this situation. They're a little bit like, you know, too good at defending themselves. They're a little too like, you know, nice and idyllic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which yeah, you know, I think we've I don't know if you've like spent much time substitute teaching, but like spent some time with younger kids, and kids that age are not that cool.
Wow, man.
They don't have sewer orgies?
He no. teaches you.
now we're getting into the book territory.
He teaches your children.
I had to at least mention it because that's like whenever people like
wait,
when
what?
The
this is a thing?
In the, oh, in the there's book. Like a full on orgy with like the entire
yeah.
losers club
there,
in the sewer.
So there's
wait,
a moment
what?
Where, okay, so after they defeat yeah. it the in the fuck? Sewer when they're kids, they're like I don't remember if like they've been like exposed to like, you know, it's maddening, you know, deadlight things, which are kind of briefly referenced in the movie, or
yeah.
if they're just, like, really freaked out, but, like, they're in the sewers, and they're, like, freaking out, and then, like, to calm them down, Bev has sex with each of the boys individually,
yeah.
which, like, kind of has, I've read some compelling arguments that, like, that's, like, that moment is the, like, emotional, you know, center of the whole book, but it's definitely also the fantasy
wait.
Of, like, a dude.
Straightforward, like,
no,
played
this
it straight.
Real.
Like, played
this
it straight.
Real.
Has
yeah.
sex
real.
With this
yeah.
yeah.
What?
Yes, this happens.
Every time they like think
why?
About making any version of it, the first question everyone asks is like, are they gonna do the orgy though? And it's like, they're obviously not gonna do the
yeah,
orgy.
The answer is always hell no.
No,
we're not doing that.
Because Stephen King is
those kids
not,
are so young in that film.
Because Stephen King is like not really one for subtlety or good taste.
No.
I like his books, but like subtlety and good taste.
That
are,
was
like
the height of his
forte.
Substance abuse issues.
Yeah,
too.
I was just about to say
so,
cocaine's a hell of a drug,
yeah.
so
Cool.
On that note,
somehow I knew it would end there.
Everybody, let's wipe the paint off your face,
mm-hmm.
and let's talk about how we really feel. Casey, would you like to go first?
I was not wearing a mask. I
oh.
loved this movie. I'm so excited for the sequel. I love it as like a lore and a piece of media that has been redone several times. It's great.
Nice. Bri.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I like it.
Very good.
That's it.
It's pretty good, actually. I think that, you know, my criticisms of it as an adaptation and as like a horror film are kind of still they still stand, but I think that there's so much about this movie that works. Like I think like the casting is freaking great,
yeah,
and like the child actors are great and the chemistry between them is great, and I think that like even if this, you know, it didn't scare me, but I think that even if it kind of underwhelmed me as a horror film in some ways, like as like a, you know, as a movie about people, I think it was actually pretty good. Again, like not all of them get equal treatment, but I really liked the characters and the way they were portrayed.
Nice. Katie?
This will surprise no one, but I love this movie. So like I said earlier, like I haven't seen this movie since 2017 when it first came out in the theaters, but something about it has just stuck with me. So
yeah.
even though I don't remember like every single specific scene or scare, like there are the way that movie made me feel, like it perfectly captures what it's like. It's like every anxiety, like fantasy I had as a child, everything that I was scared of, it's like if that were real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
like especially like the kid, like the painting,
mm-hmm.
like it just all like very struck home with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also like it. I think it was great. And upon the rewatch, like I feel like it's just as entertaining.
Yeah.
Especially if you put a little distance between the last time you've seen it, like you're like, oh right, I remember this scene. Like every scene just kind of clips right along, and there's something like kind of good in each.
Great pacing.
Scene.
Yeah. Great movie. Great pacing.
Yeah, and I agree. The only real gripe I have is like I want to see more Mike. I want to see more Ben.
Yeah. I want to know more about the Loser Club. Like I'm wondering about the origin, but I guess it's not really important it
in the movie. Like
And I mean, maybe we'll get more in chapter two. Like I imagine there'll be quite a few flashbacks.
But also, I guess I don't need it either. Like it's still a pretty damn good. Like
it
goes from plot point to plot point well. So
So yeah, I don't know. I don't really have anything to add other than what y'all.
It's accessible.
Absolutely,
it's very accessible.
Yeah, it's really watchable for sure. And that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Thank you all for being here. And we're going to keep talking about this, other Stephen King stuff, clowns, who knows, on the extended play after this. And you can listen to that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/24flamespod. If you feel like supporting the show, we really appreciate it. And there's a bunch of other good stuff over there for you to get for low, low prices. And if you've got thoughts about it or Stephen King or clowns, you can email us at 24flamespod@gmail.com or find us on social media at 24flamespod. Wherever you listen to podcasts, go and leave a rating and write a review and subscribe so you can get every episode and more. And that, that's going to do it for this episode. Next week, I pulled my phone out, forgot what I pulled my phone out for. And now I have to...
Didn't go the right thing.
Wait, let's wait. Everyone, just relax. Next week, American Beauty is on the show.
Oh, boy.
A horror film...
Look closer.
Jesus Christ. A horror film in different ways. But everybody come back for that next week. And Brian, would you like to plug
Funhouse? Hi, hello. We've got Funhouse 5, our flagship anthology... play anthology at Annex Theater from September 19th through the 28th. If you like it, you might like Funhouse 5. There are it's definitely shaping up to be there'll be some horror elements in it.
Cool.
Nice. So yeah, it'll be a little scary.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh nice.
Come on out. Oh nice. 8 p.m.
Great. Yeah, everybody come down to the Annex Theater. It's the first time in that space for us, but it'll be good.
It'll be good.
And other than that, everybody, we'll catch you on next week's episode. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye.
We all float.
Bye, it, Georgie. 40 Fish Media.